Okay, now we're back to do our third and final topic for today, which is the best bond topic. And that the reason I'm including this here is that the whole idea of the confidence indicator for which I devised for T-theory is basically the timing signal for the best bond index. And then I wanted to go on and talk about other things relative to the current situation of why the advanced decline line is stronger than I have been anticipating, and how you work this generally into strategies and so forth. First of all, there's no PDF file for this because it comes out as a PNG file to begin with, but if you want to make that a little bit more legible, if you just click on the link, what you do is you get a big PNG. See, when you make a PNG file, it's an image, it's collapsed into the width of the available space on TypePad here, and but if you get a bigger one, you can make it get bigger, then it becomes much more clearer, and it looks just the same as the PDF file. So just click on the image, you'll be able to see the numbers a little bit clearer. The whole point on the confidence indicator was that I never wanted to say how you would define the declining confidence and the rising confidence changes and the cyclicality there. So what I did was I just plotted it out for each year, starting from 2000, what the S&P 500, which is the equity benchmark, which includes dividends, and the VUSTX, which is the bond fund, including the dividends, or the interest payment, and FAG is capital appreciation, depreciation, along with the interest payments, and so you get that for every year. And then the best bond, you just say you arbitrarily pick the best one, and you get these results, which are very good, going along the bottom. That way, you don't have to explain where you got your signals from, it just mainly it means that you could occupy a position for 1 year, which is a long-term proposition. Not that you necessarily would, but that's the way it comes out. So it becomes sort of a benchmark of using the confidence and the T-theory confidence indicator, assuming you do make rational choices. Now, when you get to 2010, you get to 2000. A couple of things worth knowing here. If you look at 2001, you got the FAGX is up 72%. If you look at 08, it's down 32%. And if you go back to 03, you see the capital income is up 39%. And before that, it wasn't good, but it wasn't terrible either. The S&P 500 was bad going down in 2000, 2001, 2002, which was the main point of that story. So market cycles are always kind of different, and yet it always seems to come out that's a pretty good way to go. And when you're doing compounding of growth, you don't necessarily have to be in the best thing. You just have to be the thing that isn't the worst and is close to the top of being the best, and you go through that. So when you get to 2010, you can see that the total return on FAGX is 7.98%. The S&P 500 with the dividends is 9.75%. So this is a case where but if you look last year, you see the previous year, you see that the capital income greatly outperformed the S&P 500. So you have to take this with a grain of salt and so forth. Also, it's not a really good idea to have 100% of your money in any one item, because of diversity always is a smart move over a long term trend, because some things can go wrong. So one of the things that sit down with my business partner, Paul, we're trying to talk about 70% of it goes into this program, and another 30% goes to something else. And the biggest T happens to be gold, so that's 10% is going to gold, 70% goes to this, so 20% can go into growth funds is pretty much what we want to decide. That's quite a change from the period in our program going back prior to 2000, where we were roughly committed to either almost 100% in growth funds, if the T's were favorable, and 100% in the money market funds. And if you go way back into the program when it was started back into the 80s and so forth, there wasn't any real problem when you were in a bear market, because the interest rates on the money market fund were quite high, and you could afford to sit in there, and you're actually making real money. I had a question on the fact that there was a write-up that said that money was going into bonds, and how can you construe that as being a cash buildup phase? The answer is a cash buildup phase, when we draw the trend lines in this in the market, is basically an anti-equity buildup of resources away from equities. This away from equities could be bonds, it could be gold, it could be art objects, it could be anything else. It doesn't have to be cash. But when we started out a long time ago, the money market funds did have the high interest rates. They went up to like over 10% for a while, but even there, they were 7 or 8% long periods of time. And you know, the long term history of common stocks over a 60-year period was like is taken to be 10%. Maybe sometimes they say it's 11 or 12%, but it had been at that point 10%. So anytime you can get close to 10% without any risk, that was the buildup, and it was cash because the money market funds are quite liquid, so it's close to being cash. And that cash, so we called it a cash buildup in that time period. But if it is true that money is going into bonds, we construe that as being a cash buildup phase. It means it's a haven resource, an anti common stock place to put your money. It's possible that if that ever reverses and people stop putting money into bonds, which I don't believe that's true, but it could be true to some extent, then the market could really take off, because that is considered to be a potential cash buildup phase. See, so the term cash buildup phase should be probably changed in the future, but that's what we call it. So in any case, that one of the problems you have here is that you're that the 70% of the money is in the wrong, you know, should be in the S&P 500. So if you go into this program and you keep going, it's okay because it's positive, but you have to make some allowances for the opportunity to go for something in more the equity market. And as I said, if you own Tocqueville Gold Fund, that technically isn't. It's kind of an equity. In other words, it is a mutual fund, and they can't hold 100% in gold bars because they are an equity, because that's a commodity fund. So if you buy a gold fund if you buy GLDX, that is a pure gold fund. But if you buy a gold mining stock fund, they are restricted to being in companies that deal with gold for the most part, and so they turn out to be equities. But that's somewhat of an artificial demonstration or definition. You can see that the VSUX, the government bond funds, are not making an awful lot of money, and that's because the fact that the FAGX is making money, 7.98%, and the VUSTX is not making money, is what leads you to believe that you're confident. Because if you go back into 08, you see that the government bond fund of VUSTX was up 22%, whereas the FAGX capital and income was down 32%. So that's just what the ratio is. That's all. Except we just use the price of the fund. We don't use the total. This is the total return, includes dividends. Because you can get that off a plot of a chart pretty easily. So I just wanted to wind up and cover that point about what cash buildup phase. When we draw the trend line on the oscillators and we say it's a cash buildup phase, we really mean it's money that doesn't want to go into equities and it's someplace else. Okay. And when we break out of that, we say it's coming from someplace else, but we don't necessarily mean that it's possible. We've got to be able to draw a tease going up into August 26th. Or any other time that has a big breakout, and it just means that it's the money is coming from someplace else, and it could be bonds. But you know, if it's coming from bonds, the bonds should be starting to show losses, because whenever you sell bonds, the prices goes down, and the numbers are going to turn bearish on this one. But we haven't seen anything like that for a long time. The VSU, the government bond fund, has a excellent average rate of return of 7%. It's only 1.7% for this year as of the 23rd of April. But generally speaking, people like that, because the S&P 500 rate of return isn't that great. It's just got as many pluses as minuses into it, and they just don't want to go on the roller coaster ride. So unless you can come up with something that's dramatically different, I don't think that you're going to find out that there's a big rush out of bonds and so forth, and so it won't become part of the cash buildup. But technically speaking, it's possible that the money that's flowing into bonds now is part of a future T, and that deals with the mega T's. You know, why we go down to the year 2013, 2016, something like that, and then you're getting ready to cut a long-term trend line. Where is it coming from? It could be from a bond case. In the case of the big bull market that started in 1982, you could say that money, that cash buildup was really in commodities. It was in gold, it was in oil, and other physical assets that people had been stored up in the period from 68 to 82. And it's always the other guy that's coming in. The ones they were saving up before is what's fueling the next bull market. So now I still get reports, just to wind this up, I still get reports that the M3 files that cut out after 12 minutes, there's thousands of people that do this, and it's always a couple of people that do it, and it's always the same problem, that they don't, it's a local computer problem. I always get some reports, like a couple of reports, but it's like 0.1% of the people that are doing it, or 0.01% of the people that are doing it. So it's a localized problem, and I got plenty of things to do. And just to add to the diagnostics down below, if you have a problem with today's file, go check the archives and see if you have a problem there. If you have a, we know that the archive problems don't have any problems, because people have been looking at those for a long time, and there are no reports on the archive problems. So, yeah, if you have a problem here, but you don't have a problem in the archives, maybe there's a problem. But if you have a problem with the archives, it's just your computer's buffer is full, and you have to restart it. And a lot of people don't like to restart their computers anyway. So that's a fairly normal type of a thing. But in any case, I don't spend a lot of time on this. On those messages, unless I got a big flood of them, then I'll know there's something wrong. But I always listen to this, and my business partner listens to it on a Windows. I'm using a Mac machine, and they use it on a Windows machine. And it's basically, if you keep your computers up to date and so forth, that usually isn't a problem. The problem is the people that don't know anything about computers, and so they just turn it. It's an appliance, and they turn it on, and they forget to recycle the stuff over it. It needs maintenance. All computers need maintenance of some type. T3 needs maintenance too, so you know. So that's the way it goes. Okay, so that's that for today. Next, when we switch back to the other file, it's basically I'm going to just go with it. If you break out the trending line. Oh, another strategy you can do, which I'll probably end up doing, is you can scale in. I don't know that the 13. If you need to buy something, what you end up doing is you go to you scale in, and you look at some of the dates that we got here. But you don't have to put it all on one date. You just scale it in, and you get back to 100% investment. And then when you get to the March 20th, you see the blow off. You scale some of it out because you're going to need the drop. But I don't think the drop is I think the drop, if you go into the 20th on a real roll up, that roll-up, or speculative surge, that surge is probably going to get set back modestly, and then it's going to come back with a vengeance again going into August. So, you know, I don't think the picture is going to be that bearish, and we'll get too hysterical on that whole point. That's it for this week. If you have any other suggestions that you, particularly topics, I'm very interested in that James sent the stuff in there, because it saves me to have to go through all that cycle work just to try to figure out that there's something else there. And or you have other things that you want to talk about, but it can't be about hyperinflation, because I got to use my indicators here, and I don't have anything in the you know, I don't have any tools here that to deal with the hyperinflation. I can discuss interest rates, but then I know what they're doing, because I'm watching them right here. And if there was hyperinflation, the FAGUX would be negative. the VUSTX would be probably going down. Well, in 2009 it was down 12%. Okay, but that was a bad year because they all sold the bonds to buy the common stocks. See, so that depressed it. But if this number starts going negative in 2011, like that is hyperinflation because bonds can't take hyperinflation. In that case, the gold should be going up. I should actually put the gold price in here too, because that's the other place they hide the money is in assets. But that's called best bond plus. You put a plus sign on it. That you need to pick up things like gold and other stuff that could be part of the equation of where the money is being stored. The assets are being stored for the cash buildup phase. Okay, that's it. Bye bye. Be back next Sunday. Bye bye.